you want to make sure that the way that you're telling this story about the way that you're trying to access capital is that you're telling a story of opportunity. You're telling a story about how your business, as a function of the way it's structured, as a function of the things you've achieved, is somehow able to leverage an opportunity for substantial gain. That should always be the arc of the story you're telling. Whether it's the case that you've got, you know, a lot of debt that you need to clear, or you're really in trouble and you need, you know, that LC extension, whatever it is, make sure that the arc of the narrative is fundamentally that there's opportunity here. I've seen it, I've analyzed it, and this capital allows me to unlock it, right? You must always be unleashing something, right? The idea is not that, you know, I need this money to prevent my business from falling apart, right? Because that's not a sexy narrative, right? Nobody wants to be part of that, right? And so you can take the same fundamental data about what's happening in your business and turn it into a story of opportunity, or turn it into a story of, you know, a few guys trying to hold down the decline as it's happening. And no bank or no lender wants to be, you know, the last person holding the bag and holding the door as your business is on the way down. So I think the first thing for me, the first element there is story.
Every big thing starts small. It's a natural law. Every big multinational corporation was once a small business. Welcome to the Small Starter Business Podcast, a unique podcast for practical tips and advice to help you start, grow, or turn around your business.
Welcome to the Small Starter Business Podcast, which also doubles at this time to be a session of the Mastermind Strategy Session with our exclusive club of insiders. We have some of our members here in attendance live, even though it's virtual. And we have a very special guest today. People who listen to the podcast are no stranger to Kristen H. Wilson. She had the first session earlier with us toward the end of last year. And now we're having the second part of our three-part series exclusively with the Small Starter Podcast community and the insiders. So before she speaks, I just want to run through a brief introduction so that you know exactly who she is and why you need to listen to her. Kristen H. Wilson is a venture builder and founder of Spurt, an organization that develops local African companies into global giants. She holds degrees from Princeton University, the University of Oxford, and is currently a Stanford University PhD candidate. Kristen works with entrepreneurs to tackle business challenges and capture growth opportunities to scale their businesses. She has completed over 100 engagements across various African countries with a diverse and highly capable talent pool. Kristen, it's a pleasure to have you here with us once again.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. That was a very generous introduction.
Thank you. But again, I hope we did it. We did you justice, because it happens. We're now in a world where, because of all the noise, people have to choose who they listen to, and it's important to let people know, you know, first off, that it's what they are well, and you know, they need to listen to you, not just because of your academic background, but because of the relevance of the work you're actually doing right now. You're working with businesses. You're working with startups. So I look forward to a very interesting conversation. It's always a pleasure learning from your insights and your knowledge and firsthand experience. So today we're going to be talking about capital. And if I were going to give you, you know, some room to, you know, introduce this topic, what would you have to say about capital in just one or two sentences before I start coming with the specific questions?
For sure. I mean, I think the most critical thing is, you know, businesses need capital, right? They need to generate capital, and they need to deploy that capital strategically. And so that's sort of like the business of a business, right? And so really important sort of like conversation that we're having today.
So it's good that you've used two very interesting terms to describe today's topic, which is that capital is important. essentially, it is more or less the business of a business, using your exact words. And then you have to deploy capital strategically, which is a very important term that will run through the conversation we're going to have today. Now, in my own experience, it's been almost a decade plus, you know, working with entrepreneurs. I've had all sorts of, you know, stories, ideas, and things like that. But I really have to give it to capital. Capital remains up there on the list of, you know, challenges that people face when they're trying to start or grow a business. I listen to all these amazing ideas from bright people. And the moment I ask and say, you know, you have this amazing idea, you're depriving the world of this opportunity, why haven't you started it? I can almost bet that the reason will be, you know, I don't have capital, or I don't have enough money to make this thing a reality. Or I see somebody who has a promising business, and I'm saying, you know, this thing has to be bigger than this. There are more people you can serve with your products or services, people who need it. And they tell me, you know, it's capital. You know, they don't have capital to grow the business. So I guess my first direct question to you would be that, you know, since capital appears to be like the number one obstacle that's holding back people from starting or growing a business, in your candid opinion, do you think the lack of capital is a valid reason for not starting or growing a business? Or do you think it's a flimsy excuse? Where exactly do you stand?
Okay. That's an interesting binary. I think it's very, very hard to get going on a business if you don't have any capital. So I don't know, but okay. So let me put it this way. I think it depends on the venture, right? And I think it also depends on the context, right? So I think there are situations where really, if you can't, you know, figure out how to generate that initial sort of like startup capital, you just won't be able to get off the ground, right? So whether it's you're going to get it through a loan or you're going to get it through an equity investment, there are just certain ventures that without that initial capital, you can't really get off the ground, right? So say, and I think this especially applies to ventures that are like, you know, capital intensive, right? Or require high amounts of sort of like cash flow on a regular basis. It's kind of hard to get off the ground if you can't sort of get that initial startup capital. But then I think there's other ventures that maybe perhaps require a bit of creativity. You know, sometimes getting off the ground could be a matter of, you know, strategic partnerships that you negotiate on favorable terms to the folks whom you would otherwise have offered capital if you had it, right? So you know, negotiate some interesting repayment terms and, you know, quid pro quo exchanges that allow you to sort of get off the ground, generate some cash flow, you know, repay your debts and get going. So there are certain businesses where perhaps the amount that you're dealing with, the sector that you're dealing in, and so on and so forth, does allow you some flexibility to be able to sort of get going without some initial base of capital. But I think it's definitely dependent on a case-by-case basis. So that's sort of related to this question of, are you able to get off, should you be doing it in the first place if you don't have that capital? That second question around expansion without capital, that one's a bit different, right? I think a lot of businesses, especially if you have a good business, especially if you have a thriving business, odds are there's more than capital standing in your way. If you're not expanding, it could actually be elements around your strategy that you've sort of designed either consciously or unconsciously to prevent scale or to slow down scale, right? It could also be elements of your governance, right? Maybe you've got stakeholders who, by virtue of the things that they're interested in or the amount of risk that they want to tolerate in the business, limit scale. Because typically, once you have a reasonably functional business, you've got the documentation and so on and so forth, there's certainly interesting avenues to pursue to be able to get capital. again, particularly if your business is doing what it should be doing, which is, you know, generating capital in some way or another, right? Historically, right? Even if it's not profitable, you know, so I also do want to sort of separate profit making from revenue generation or, you know, generating capital.
So that's an interesting last point you've made there, the difference between profit generating and revenue generating. But I'm going to park that one for a bit, because it appears your answer to the question is it depends. And for some kinds of businesses that require a significant outlay of capital to get started, it appears that your options are limited. You just need money to get started. And if I hear you correctly, something like real estate, you know, where, for example, I'm not sure how you can navigate your way around buying all the materials and stuff you need to actually build the houses. So it looks like that one right off the bat, you have capital as a major impediment. But then you said something about getting creative, like, you know, strategic partnerships and stuff like that. And I'm hoping we can throw more light on that. And off the top of my head, I'm thinking that most service businesses may just be this way. So if I'm running a training business or a consulting business, whether it's business consulting or IT consulting, it's not really a capital intensive business. And depending on how creative I can go about it, I may not really need a lot of capital to get me going. And I like that you made a distinction between getting started and when you've already started, because I noticed you talked about them, you know, in separate ways. When you've already started a business, you mentioned cash flow, you know, that is important. And then if you haven't raised money, you also need to start looking at like revenue and profits. We're going to talk about all of those things in a little bit. So at this point, if a person is at a position where they say, I need a lot of capital, or I don't need as much capital, I just need something small to get me going, can you share some specific strategies, methods, techniques that, you know, people can use to get around the capital problem? I know you gave away strategic partnerships there, but I want this to come as a ballpark answer to this question. What strategies have you used, either personally with your clients you've observed are working? Because the people in this audience, it's very likely that 60 to 70% of them are at positions in their business where they need more money. So what strategies, what options can they be looking at?
Right. Okay. So you've got strategic partnerships, right? That's one set, right? But there's also things like competitions, right? So particularly if you're just getting off the ground, or you know, you're in especially early stages. If you're solving a problem, right? If you're tackling a need in an interesting way or in a novel way, you know, chances are if you dedicate, you know, a good day of your time to doing research around, you know, who's pumping money into your, you know, your local government, your state government, your, you know, the NGO down the road, the NGO that's focused on your sector in some way, or your demographic in some way, you know, you're going to find something where somebody is offering money or resources in exchange for, you know, filling some forms and, you know, doing XYZ things, right? And I think that sometimes competitions are often overlooked as a real opportunity to get access to capital. It's not going to be substantial amounts of capital. So again, it really sort of depends on, you know, the kind of venture that you're dealing with and so on and so forth. But really, in some cases, they can be quite interesting. Also for getting you that visibility, right, that you can then parlay into strategic partnerships and relationships. And I think right along that line of competitions is grants, right? So, you know, coming back to the sort of question of like capital intensive sectors, right? Particularly in our region, right? Because of geopolitical circumstances, there's all these really interesting grants available through places like embassies, through places like large for-profit organization foundations, you know, essentially existing to support work that's good for the world, as it were, right? So it's really hard maybe to raise, some venture debt or to raise within your community or get a bank to convince you to build a loan if you've got this, you know, electric car that you know is going to change the face of traffic in Lagos because it's, I don't know, the size of a keke but has the safety and aerodynamics of a car, whatever, right? You've got this novel idea, nobody's going to fund it. Odds are, you know, the Swiss embassy or the Norwegian embassy has some, you know, crazy grant sitting there about promoting, you know, smarter cities and better cities that you need to be looking at, right? These are real examples, right? There's, you know, for instance, in Ghana and in Kenya that I know of, ventures that have built prototypes up to the tune of multi-million dollars on the back of grants funded by embassies and, you know, foundations, right? Basically testing out an idea, right? And figuring out if particular forms of technology can actually really work. It's a hard grind, right? It's not like they sort of walked in somewhere and said, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this. And, you know, somebody at the front desk of the embassy said, oh, excellent, here's some free money, right? Typically, it's a long process of application. It requires, you know, having your ducks in a row, you know, being intentional. So again, for a certain kind of business, that might be a waste of your time, right? It might be much, much smarter for you to, you know, go to the bank or go knock on some doors of some rich uncles and so on and so forth and, you know, just get a little bit of money, get going, you know, turn that money over and do it in something. But then in other cases, honestly, that's probably your best bet, right? Getting some substantial capital that's coming in the form of non-dilutive funding, that's mitigating the amount of pressure you have around debt so that you can focus on building and prototyping and ideating around your products and so on and so forth. So it really sort of strategy is required, right? You've got a business, it's an existing business or it's a new business. You really do have to think about what are the best ways, right, for me to get to capital? Sometimes you're sort of running a business or you're sort of starting on a business. And particularly now, I mean, I'm sure folks are sitting down hearing, oh, this company has raised, I don't know, $500 gajillion, and this company has raised, you know, $12 billion and so on and so forth. And, you know, folks are like, oh, yeah, maybe I can do that or maybe I should do that. But you also have to just think about what is the appropriate route for your business. Right. Thankfully, as the sort of if we look specifically at the technology ecosystem on the continent, it is starting to mature. Right. So you're seeing more and more people pursuing other kinds of funding, not just equity fundraising, but actually venture debt. Right. You're seeing, DFIs and other players, large institutions coming into this space and offering these kinds of solutions to ventures that make a lot of sense, right? And sometimes, particularly if you're running a business that, you know, hasn't been traditionally designed for venture capital, venture debt might actually still have some options for you, right? Because from the point of view of the, you know, investor or the capital provider, it's a little bit of a lower risk, right? Because they're not, you know, putting some money in your pocket and hoping to, you know, squeezing their fingers and saying, what if, right? There's some clear loan terms, there's some interest, and so on and so forth. So just, I think, building out an intentional strategy is really critical here and making sure that that strategy fits your business. So just coming back to where we started, right? Strategic partnerships, competitions, grants, right? And then, of course, we all know the typical institutions that we can access around debt, right? So these would be banks, microfinance institutions, lenders, and so on and so forth. So those would certainly be options as well. And then, of course, there's good old family and friends. But again, that depends on the quality of your networks and, you know, who's in the family tree or in the social network that you can shake to get access to capital. There's definitely some people that have an uncanny ability to network their way to capital, right? So maybe perhaps in their own immediate circles, they don't have access to capital, but they're able to sort of, you know, strategically deploy relationships. And next thing you know, they're sitting in Elon Musk's office having a chat. That's not a lot of people, but certainly some people have also been able to network their way into capital as well. But yeah, that would essentially be my recap. I know I had a bit of a long digression around this piece with grants, but I think it's really important because sometimes the quality, I have sat on grant review boards and looked at grant applications and stuff. And I think sometimes the quality of grant applications that you see really sort of shows that people are perhaps underutilizing these as a medium for getting capital in, you know, businesses that are otherwise valid propositions.
Thank you very much for that summary at the end. And you've touched on, you know, several interesting points. And, you know, what catches my attention, especially on the strategic partnership side, is when you combine, you have to be creative, you have to use strategy. Essentially, you have to hustle your way around capital. And then you talk about strategic partnerships. I see it in many conversations I've had with entrepreneurs where we're having a conversation about capital and we're brainstorming. And then all of a sudden, there's an opportunity from a customer, from a relative, from sometimes even competitors, that there's some way you can partner. And then you can avoid something you thought was going to cost you a lot of money, maybe equipment or marketing or stuff like that. So there's a lot of potential in strategic partnerships. And I really want us to explore that a little bit more. Even if all the other ones are familiar, there are people in this audience, in the insiders, who have raised money from friends and family. One of us is a YC, Y Combinator alumnus. He got it, I think, last year or 2 years ago. We've had people here who've raised money from grants from as little as $5,000 all the way to $50,000. So the people we have in here are people who already are very interesting when it comes to how they strategize around raising money. And it's good that not all of them have raised money through conventional sources. Some of them have raised from banks. I have somebody, one of us, who is currently in some kind of trouble because he defaulted on the loans because of COVID and stuff like that. So just before I ask you about strategic partnerships, I want to know your take on the three types of broadly available capital that are out there, which are equity, and there's debt, and there's the grants you're talking about. Right off the bat, the major weakness of grants is, yes, it's free money, but it's not always enough. There are very few sources of large grants out there, $1 million. Maybe the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Holt Foundation, and a couple of very other few organizations give large grants. All the other capital that's available, it's either available as equity or as debt. So, but looking at these three broad types of capital, if an entrepreneur had to choose, which one do you think is better? Or is there some trade-off or some kind of hybrid? And which one should we even avoid? So I guess you take it how you want.
I think you can guess my answer, right? It depends. It depends because it depends on stage of business, type of business, and so on and so forth. And I think particularly if you're growing, if the intention is to grow a quite large business, a quite scaled business, at one point or another, you're kind of going to be interacting with all of these three things, right? You're going to have to acquire, get some debt in there, especially to do some really large expansions, things that you think are going to be especially profitable, because, you know, it just might make zero sense for you, to leverage dilutive funding, or like you said, there might be no grants that are large enough to do that work. A note here. So, I mean, my short answer is it depends, but a note here about debt, right? One of the things that we see a lot is that businesses don't necessarily have the equipment to navigate the credit system, right? So I think if you sit down and you talk or you eavesdrop on, you know, entrepreneurs, active entrepreneurs building, there's always some lamentation about the difficulty of acquiring loans and the difficulty of, you know, getting capital. And those challenges are real, right? So I don't mean to discount those, but I do think that there's also a kind of insufficient knowledge for folks building business around how they can use this sort of loan capital to move their businesses forward.
And because so the truth of the matter is that debt as a mechanism for
as soon as a business, you know, accessing capital is a pretty sweet mechanism if you've got a solid business, right? If your business has the right kind fundamentals of
credit system of making and generating money, then debt is the
as soon as you
way,
can
right?
Because business, you know. Get some terms that require maybe, you know, 20% capital in our crazy part of the world, right?
Loan applications,
the return,
and it doesn't have to be an accountant,
but still, payroll, right?
That's still going to be better than giving off
retainer,
giving off part of your business,
range,
right?
Or dedicating somebody that says, "Oh, hey, you know,
applying to
got
a grant
this firm,
that you hope will get,
do
my
books,
will only be available."
More importantly,
I don't know, 1 in 20,000
You who have you helped people?
And so I think one of the things that
where did they prepare
their, where did they apply to
as soon as
the business is able?
What
to,
bank should I
is
be looking
need
at?
To invest
who do you
time,
know to be particularly helpful,
and resources,
so on and so forth?
Into
because odds are,
kind
if you
of
engage
credit
kind
system
of
providers
of
financial services
advisory,
they're going
to
be
soon
able
as you
to
can in
your
business,
in your small
get
business,
an accountant
in the right
to
experience
as
you
know,
to know
working
which bank
capital,
might be
working,
might look
you know,
more favorable,
loan applications,
how you might need to
and it doesn't have to be
XYZ
an accountant to be able to
payroll,
right? This could be some sort of retainer or something that you arrange with somebody that says, oh, hey, you know, you've got this firm, please help me do my books. But more importantly, please, who have you helped people prepare loan applications? Where did they prepare that? Where did they apply to? What sector? What bank should I be looking at? Who do you know to be particularly helpful? And so on
there
and so forth.
There is nothing sweeter
because odds
than
are
using
if you engage with these kinds of providers of financial
business,
services,
especially
advisory,
when they don't have
they're
going
to be able to point you
in your, business,
in your small business
a
right, in the right
of
direction.
Equity
as to know
sweet,
which bank
but then
might,
the downside
be,
is
might look
you have
more
to share
favorable,
your company with somebody
how you
else
might need to present
XYZ
to be able to move
you're not giving out a share.
Obviously, consulting firms can help as well. But
I
think dealing specifically with
clear, and
you know,
I like
financial
that bias, and I agree with that bias,
gives you
because
even
it's not coincidental
access,
that
particularly
most
if you've got a small
big
business and you don't have those
across all sectors are good friends with the banks
because
and that's
frankly,
because they rely
the,
a lot on
earlier
debt capital.
As a business,
some of
right,
them it could be working
somebody
capital
else's
loans
capital
to pay salaries
and
stuff. And some of them even have long-term loans to
and then give them
the infrastructure, buy equipment and stuff like that.
These
big companies
do it again over and over again.
And whilst
the sooner you're really
loans,
business, right?
Because of all
as
the horror stories we have
the
heard,
amount of other
the
people's
big successful
capital,
companies
right?
Are actually doing well with
getting your
loans. And I think the reason is just as you explained.
Your, you know,
they
and,
understand
and you
the
work
credit
on your
system.
Payment terms.
They
you
know how
on
to,
your,
using your two words, navigate
you
and
your,
manipulate
your
the system.
Your
although
your,
essentially,
your
it's very clear, the banks need to make money.
The,
it's just that they don't want to put their money in the business,
right, in terms of
that
how
will not
quickly
pay
you're able to regenerate
and then
that cash,
if you know
how
to tell the
you're
story
able to
and how to position
that
yourself.
Sometimes
and I think
the,
you did that
brilliantly
by when you mentioned
accountant or finance manager is actually just like cash flow management, right?
For example,
they're not doing exceptional things
for you
on bookkeeping. At this point, I think there's lots of technologies that cost, you know,
they want to know how long you've been in business
a month
because
or even less
banks typically
to manage
don't want
your
to invest in ideas.
Sometimes
so
the importance
you for
of
the,
having
for your
somebody on
the last 3
payroll or
so that tells them
to think about,
they want to
you know,
see your
money management is really about cash
account.
Flow management.
That gives
right?
them a sense
because
of your cash
that
flow.
Also does
so while the ordinary
right?
entrepreneur does not
they're
understand
making
why
money,
banks
they're spending
and the credit system are asking for
the management,
if you understand how they think and what they're looking for,
and you know, the better your
cash
flow management,
other people's money, and then you can use that money
access
pay something
certain forms
as
of
interest.
Capital.
Now, in our climb, you're correct. The interest
capital,
rates are really
but especially
high.
Debt
but I know
sure.
many businesses,
even though you say
business,
it depends,
despite the
I
high
think
interest
your bias is
25%,
clear, which is that
30%.
There is nothing
and the reason is simple.
Than using
it depends
other
on the
people's
business.
Money.
Many of the clients I have who are,
especially
the
when they don't
have
the
bank loans,
have a
are usually
in
fast-moving consumer goods,
downside of
like retail.
Equity looks sweet.
And for a supermarket that's doing a lot of turnover, 25%
a year is nothing.
But with debt,
because these guys are doing like constant turnover every day, every month.
But you get to use their money.
So I guess you answered the question.
Your bias is clear, and I like that bias, and I agree with that bias.
Because
it's not coincidental that most of the
where you can walk into the national companies
and they can give you other people's
sectors
without
our good friends with the banks.
And that's because they rely a lot on debt capital. Some of them, it could be working capital loans to pay salaries and stuff. Some of them even have long-term loans to expand their infrastructure, buy equipment and stuff like that. These big companies love loans. And while small businesses are scared of loans, because of all the horror stories we have heard,
really have to
the
think
big
about
successful companies are actually doing well with
loans.
How do
I build the
And I think the reason is just as you explained.
That allow me
they
to
understand
access
the credit system.
I need.
They know how to, using your two words,
and as a business
navigate
person,
and manipulate the system. Although,
you're
essentially, it's very clear.
People.
The banks
sometimes
need to make
you
money.
People,
it's just that they don't want to put their money
today,
in a business
but
that
you
will not pay them back.
That there's something
and then,
that they
if you know how to tell the story
you in a few
and how to position
years,
yourself,
so you
and I think you did that brilliantly.
It's not about
when you mentioned using professionals who can prepare
you
for the credit system.
For
example, the accountants. One very common thing the banks will ask for is some track record.
These kinds of
usually, they are looking
allow
for audited financial
statements. Where,
they want to know how long you've been in business
because and they
banks typically don't want to invest in ideas.
Because
so they're asking you for,
you've sort
for
of
your
like
financial statements for the last 3 years. So that tells
them
the story.
Them
they want to see your inflows and outflows
you know,
from
to
your
use
bank
that term,
account.
Strategic
that gives them a sense of your cash flow. So while the ordinary entrepreneur does not understand why banks
kind of like
and the credit system are asking for these things,
because
if you understand how they think and what you're looking for, then they can give you access to
that
relationship
in your
and then you can use that money and pay something
that you're leveraging for this kind of
now
like
in our climb
gain.
You're correct, the interest rates are really high, but I know many businesses that still do business despite the high interest rate of 25%, 30%, and the reason is simple. It depends on the business. Many of the clients I have who are in love with the banks and are using bank loans are usually in fast-moving consumer goods like retail. Two of them are supermarkets. And for a supermarket that is doing a lot of turnover, 25% a year is nothing because these guys are doing like constant turnover every day, every month and all that. So I like how you answered the question and I like how you made it very clear that, you know, the zenith of aspiration in business is to get to a point where you can walk into the bank and they can give you other people's money without asking for a share or equity of your company in return. So at this point, I want us to segue back to strategic partnerships because you mentioned it early on and because it's a common area where there's opportunity, but many people don't understand how these things work. So if you had to describe strategic partnerships, what exactly is the objective of getting into a strategic partnership? What kinds of people or parties should an entrepreneur be looking at to develop strategic partnerships? And what exactly is the goal of a strategic partner? Because on the surface of it, it doesn't make sense to talk to my competitor. I don't see what I could likely get out of that. But if I'm thinking strategically, my competitor may actually be a potential strategic partner. So I want you to touch on this issue of strategic partnerships so we understand it a bit more.
Absolutely. And I actually love your reference to competition. One of the things we don't see enough, right, in our ecosystems is mergers and acquisitions, right? Something we actually know, right, from economics, from the study of, you know, other economies that have been able to thrive, is that ability to see what somebody's doing, see what you're doing, and say, look at the market and say, if we combine forces, if we can put our big boy pants on and set our egos aside, we're actually going to be able to take a bigger chunk of the pie than we currently are, you know, separately. There's a principle in biology that also can apply to economics. And
one
businesses.
Of the
and it's
most
that the fascinating
is greater
things
than the
I
learned
parts.
When I started working.
It's actually
with
really interesting
was how easy it was. For
as a business, if you're willing
themselves
to collaborate
out of existence,
right?
Because they weren't my
imagine
numbers,
the difference,
right?
You know,
between
two
comes
20,
in,
tiny,
you know,
tiny,
one goes out.
going three to a supplier and saying, oh,
two goes out.
I need five bags of X. It looks to you like, you know,
maybe it's making bags sense that you're not minding
versus
the numbers.
One business,
so you get to the end
that
of
is
the
an
road
association
like, oh,
of
crap,
these multiple
actually,
businesses.
A net
saying,
negative
okay,
has gone out.
Need
right,
200
and I'm in
bags of this.
I have all these things that I need to pay attention to.
Suddenly,
so,
your negotiating
you know,
power
especially
different.
When you're
and I think
in
a lot
a capital
of people,
intensive venture,
less so in our,
there's a lot of pressure
in our context, but right. still, to some
and that
extent,
pressure, I think,
saw the importance of this,
a lack of attention
during the pandemic.
Because you just
right?
want to
when
execute,
supply chains
just
want to
sweet,
get this done. You
and
want
suddenly,
to get these things out of the way.
Suppliers
because,
had to make
you know,
a decision.
You need that
right?
capital to come
about
in.
Who
you're going to
supply.
So sometimes,
you're not
going to
supply
you tiny
business
because
to support
you think it's going to bring some capital
to them from their perspective.
But is the timing of that
deal
going to be right for you?
And so some smart people got into
is the cash flow
going to
come in
at
the right
affiliates
time.
And
should I
you
really
know, little
be given
associations
a 30-day,
to help them
you know
credit
period
should
goods.
It maybe be
you know,
you know
you're not
going
to be able to trigger bulk
should I really be working
if you're
with
this
not in
this
a large enough association
and sometimes
so
this is
I think
what
attention
a strategic partnership
deal.
Means right
mind the
it means
numbers.
Okay
that,
yes.
that would really
you
be
sell
my sell
grains and I sell
the strategy around
sure thing
we need to buy some millers
and things
from China
well are we going to separately go and try and navigate customs and navigate this and navigate that? Or are we going to go to the same broker and say, look, we need 10 mils. You need to get us a good deal. Structure this thing for us. When the items arrive, we split it. And you say, I wish you good luck. I'll cream you in this market, right? Being able to be intentional about when it makes sense for you to collaborate and when it makes sense for you to be working separately is really going to be important for those businesses that are going to be able to, you know, win the day. Right.
When you're building
the way
a big
you build
business,
monopoly
right?
is
huge
really
scale
by
business,
leveraging relationships
right?
at the
faster
right
you
point
fail,
in time and also letting them go at
the
right
best
you,
time.
Truth
right?
be told, you know, sometimes
right.
a relationship
if you figure out how to fail fast,
it's usefulness.
I figure out how to fail
from a business point of
business,
view,
right?
You're gonna save yourself.
But then we're
a
still
lot
caught up
party.
In.
Sometimes I've seen ventures that have had, you know,
that
were
taking
not
a lot of
quick
wins
decisions, those hard decisions. And so you're
stuck.
Still supplying a client,
and they get
really
stuck because they haven't
ago.
Learned.
And
to
you're basically
they haven't learned
your entire business now, more
a,
or less
in a sticking situation.
Business
they
up,
haven't
right?
learned
because
to
they attended your wedding,
we
went to high school together, and they're a great guy.
Well,
they should stay
right?
a great guy
because
and go to the next
they
wedding.
They just have
and
to,
so
you know,
forth,
really, really
come
out
of your business,
right?
The opportunity,
the
market was booming, demand.
And I think that
I see this a lot with opportunistic businesses.
So this is, I think,
a bunch of folks.
So to come back to this
jumped
question
on it of
bam,
what is
bam, bam,
what
bam,
is
bam.
A strategic
and then the rubber meets the
right?
road
and what is
the
stuff.
Purpose?
A strategic partnership, I think,
is a
relationship,
and so I think
formal
sometimes
formal relationship
that allows
the,
you to
the lessons
leverage,
and the resilience,
you know,
that you pick up
exponential
from
rather than
you know certain kinds of failures.
Bit.
Right. This is kind
very,
of how
very
I would differentiate
for your ability
a regular partnership
to
build
strategic
something
partnership.
That is
so rather
know,
than
going to
withstand
know,
the test.
Okay,
of time,
Johnny and
this
I
is
came
also
together,
why,
and
we,
instead of
know,
having
venture capital
two,
space,
we now have four
investors
right,
like
because each of us brought two,
founders who are not
something
doing
about
it for the
Johnny
first time.
And you coming together.
It's not
now
for any
reason
other
than.
Or 10.
When somebody knows how
you know,
exactly
something
that,
is going to
that
work
is
or
strategic
not work.
Partnership.
It's very
a strategic
useful.
Partnership is your small business having 10% of market share, Jennifer's small business having, you know, 5% of market share, somebody else's small business having 15% of market share. It's kind of, you know, you're sort of biggish players, but not that interesting. But suddenly you all come together and you control more than a third of the market. Right. And then you're able to sort of speak to vendors or speak to suppliers and have a different kind of conversation as an entity that has a third of a market. And, you know, hopefully what's an interesting market that
well,
allows
one thing
you
I buy into, which I think
is
a lesson
and allows
for all
you
of us who are listening
to have
this,
some interesting gains. So
if
think,
you are going
you know,
through hard times right now with your business,
the,
you're going through
the strategic
difficult
partnership
times,
element there
and
is really
your beginning feels like
to
it's rougher
unlock
than it should
exponential
be. What you're hearing
right?
from Christian
it's not just a simple one stepping.
Because what
you're
going through training school,
that's
exactly what it sounds like. You're building the muscle that would ensure your success if you stick to it. So
I
can't think
of
this
partnership
in any better way. So thank you very much, Christine, for
right. They're simply not doing the research of figuring out. Okay, does it make sense to talk to Johnny A, or does it make sense to talk to Agatha C, right? And knowing the difference is so important, because sometimes by the time you've wasted time talking to Johnny A, you've missed out on an opportunity with Agassi C, or you've given Johnny A a bright idea and he has no intention of, you know, being coming to the party with you, and you've lost out. Right? Because he's already in a kind of relationship with Agatha C, and you've now given them a great idea for how to, you know, push you out of the market. And so just a sort of associated point I'm making here is around research, right? And the importance. So the first point I was sort of making was around ego, right? And the real importance of being able to set aside ego to be able to identify and seize an opportunity. But then the thing that precedes that is really research, right? Being engaged in the market. One of the things that I look out for when I'm working with investors who are trying to determine, you know, which business they should invest in or not, is when you engage with the founder and you see how much market insight he has, how much awareness he has about what's going on in the sector he's playing in. It makes a difference, right? When a founder can tell you, oh, yes, In this my domain, ABCD things have happened. I saw this person do that. It means they're paying attention. It means that they're learning, and it means that likely there's room for growth. But when a business entrepreneur just got their head buried in the sand, and you know they think everybody's trying to hold them back, and they're not sharing information, they're not picking up information, they've got some preconceived ideas in their minds, you know, like you encounter some entrepreneurs, right? They've been running their business for 5 years and they're still operating essentially on the same mental model they had 5 years ago. Everything that's happened to them in that 5 years is almost like inconsequential, right? They still just have this kind of like narrow idea of what they think the world is and, you know, what's happening. And you also kind of see this with older businesses as well, right? One of the things that I've seen a lot is people operations challenges, right? That are sometimes arising because businesses are unwilling or unable to sort of adjust with the times. Nobody wants to be in Nigeria anymore when they're young and agile and, you know, and talented, right? But most people can't leave. So you end up with a workforce that's a really sort of complicated workforce. It's extremely demotivated. And you kind of have to figure out, okay, as a business, how do I leverage this workforce for good? What are the things that I should give up or the things that I should offer to be able to make me competitive, right? Who are the institutions and associations that I should liaise with to be able to, you know, get better resources into my organization? You're running a small business, but you don't have any relationships with, you know, your local institution, the university that's next to you, or the, you know, IT training center that's next to you. And so what happens when you're trying to find, you know, you've got your small business sitting somewhere in Yaba, you have built no relationships with all the IT training centers in Yaba. And when you want to go and hire an IT person, what do? You push out CVs on WhatsApp, or, you know, you think you're pretty cool. So you go on Jobberman and you go and look up, and they bring you a bunch of random people and you try and hire them and you have interviews and it turns out they're crap. But what you could have done was gone down the road, that relationship that you've maintained, and you say, hey, which of the students have been coming in here for the last few months trying to upskill themselves have really demonstrated some really good character and some really good behavior, right? You know, who's picking up the skill, who's interesting? What do you get out of that? You get a cheaper employee who's been vetted for attitude. And it's a local strategy. So sometimes you really have to think about how do I build the relationships today that allow me to access the resources I need tomorrow, right? And as a business person, you're constantly networking. You're constantly meeting people. Sometimes you meet people and there's nothing they can offer you today, but you recognize that there's something that they might be able to offer you in a few months or in a few years. So you cultivate that. It's not about calling them every 20 minutes or whatever, but you know, you check in every couple of months, you build a relationship, you keep an ear out and an eye out for what they're doing. These kinds of behaviors allow you to build relationships where, you know, somebody sees something and they think of you, right? Because you've sort of like negotiated your relationship with them in a particular way. And, you know, to use that term, strategic partnerships are negotiations, right? They're not typically kind of like static things, because by their very nature, right, there's a kind of dynamism and there's a tension in that relationship, in your strategic partnership, that you're leveraging for this kind of like exponential gain. And so it requires you paying attention. It requires you doing that intentional, you know, research and resourcing to keep that tension and keep that dynamic effective and productive for you.
Wow. I know when I asked the question about strategic partnership, I did not expect a masterclass or some mini masterclass in strategic partnerships. And I was thinking to myself, am I running the risk of diverting this topic from raising capital to strategic partnership? But I'm like, no, this is good. Let's keep going. So I want to thank you for how you really did justice to strategic partnerships there, taking it above and beyond you know, my expectation of how you were going to explain it. You went even beyond capital. And excuse me, the interesting thing that struck me is that this conversation about strategic partnerships has not really exposed capital for what capital really is. Capital is a resource, like every other resource, like human resources, physical resources, like a building. Maybe you need an office space, you need to pay rent, you need vehicles, you need equipment. Capital is just a resource. And sometimes it's a resource that can help you get other resources. But the interesting resource you just talked about here is the value of relationships and how it can yield any resource you're looking for. Just as you were talking, I was already, you know, I've had experiences where just because of a relationship, somebody was able to get a co-founder. And it would have been impossible for that person to find that quality of person. I've seen situations where a relationship led to solid employees. I've seen situations where a relationship led to getting office space in the center of a big city that, you know, the entrepreneur on their own would have never had access. And that's because the person they knew the person managing the property, and they were able to structure some kind of deal. So I think even as we talk about raising capital, it's important to acknowledge that the overarching, the most influential factor, if anything, from what you have said, is the ability to build relationships. And not just any kind of relationship, because you mentioned that there's a difference between a linear or an ordinary partnership and a strategic partnership. And if I heard you well, a strategic partnership should birth exponential outcomes. So it's interesting that in a conversation about capital, this thing called relationships has come up again. And what it's telling us is it's the ability to find and create and develop those kinds of relationships that can actually lead to the resources we're looking for. And, you know, sometimes it may not be capital you're looking for. For some people, they're not looking for capital. They just want to rent a warehouse, hire their employees, and then get started in business. It's not really the capital they need. It's what the capital can buy. And the interesting thing is that sometimes you can get those things money can buy through relationships. So thank you very much for making that important point. So some questions have been coming in. I want to mention here that we're using the chat function on Zoom to take questions. So I'm seeing a question from Will, Smart Havens. Donald is introducing himself. If you have any questions, please, by all means, use the chat to drop your questions. Now, Christine, I want to go back to something you said about how people, entrepreneurs, present themselves or make their case for raising capital. You use the example of grants, that you've been on a couple of boards where you had to assess applications from people who are trying to raise money. And I can imagine whether it's an application for a grant, application for a loan, or you're trying to convince some venture capital firm to invest in your company, I think most of these people are looking for essentially the same things. So if you could, what would be the broad categories we need to pay attention to when we are trying to convince somebody to give us money or invest money in our business? It doesn't matter if it's a grant or a loan or equity. What are the key things they are looking for that we need to watch out for?
Absolutely. So I think I'm going to start somewhere that might surprise people. Even though, you know, we were talking about your credit history and, you know, the things that financial professionals are supposed to help you with your business. And to be fair, this is something a good financial professional will also help you with. And the simple thing here is story, right? What is the narrative that your business is telling? If you don't prepare your financials well, if you don't set up your application well, sometimes the story you can be telling with your business is, this guy is on the way down. This lady doesn't know what she's doing. They're just above, you know, holding their heads above water. You've got all the documents, right? There was a checklist and you filled out all the checklists and, you know, you answered all the questions. But when it all came together, the picture it painted was, this business is on its way down, right? Or these people don't really know what they're doing. And sometimes without stepping out and taking a look at that big picture and saying, what really is the narrative that my business is telling? When I present it in this way, when we look at my financials and we look at the trend in the financials, when we look at my customer acquisition or my customer churn, right? When we look at the ratio of my expenditure to my revenue generation over the last few months and so on and so forth. If you're not paying attention to the story you're telling, you might end up telling an accidental story. And so this is, I think, for me, the very, very first thing, because forget what it is that we think we are as human beings. We're actually extremely rational people. And we make decisions based on sometimes the sentiment, right, that we feel, or the impression that we get, right, when we first encounter something. Because confirmation bias is a real thing. I encounter somebody's portfolio, it's given me an impression. And so I'm reading in depth into the rest of the materials. But psychologically, the only thing my brain is doing is paying attention to those elements of data that reinforce the narrative that I've already made, right? And so what's happened is that the rest of your application was really, unfortunately, a waste of your time. Because some way, somehow, in your sort of like, you know, presentation or initial materials, you've told the wrong story about the potential for your business. You know, one of the things you don't want to present to somebody who's supposed to give you access to capital is basically, you're a drowning man and you'll clutch at a straw, right? Because that just reduces confidence, right? Particularly in a debt situation, unless you have a pre-established relationship with this lender who they can say, oh, I can vouch for this person, or I know that there's going to be a benefit. Honestly, you want to make sure that the way that you're telling this story about the way that you're trying to access capital is that you're telling a story of opportunity. You're telling a story about how your business, as a function of the way it's structured, as a function of the things you've achieved, is somehow able to leverage an opportunity for substantial gain. That should always be the arc of the story you're telling. Whether it's the case that you've got, you know, a lot of debt that you need to clear, or you're really in trouble and you need, you know, that LC extension, whatever it is, make sure that the arc of the narrative is fundamentally that there's opportunity here. I've seen it. I've analyzed it. And this capital allows me to unlock it, right? You must always be unleashing something, right? The idea is not that, you know, I need this money to prevent my business from falling apart, right? Because that's not a sexy narrative, right? Nobody wants to be part of that. Right. And so you can take the same fundamental data about what's happening in your business and turn it into a story of opportunity, or turn it into a story of, you know, a few guys trying to hold down the decline as it's happening. And no bank or no lender wants to be, you know, the last person holding the bag and holding the door as your business is on the way down. So I think the first thing for me, the first element there, story. Then I think the second element, and I'll stick to those two just to not overwhelm, and also, you know, realizing that we've actually been talking an hour surprises me. But the second element I'll also say is specificity. I think that these two points really, they cut across everything, And it's something that I try to impart to people that I work with, both at the level of business leaders as well as, you know, employees and so on and so forth. That if you can combine story with specificity, you're off to the races, you know, because that creates confidence in whoever is the recipient of whatever information you have to provide. If you can tell us something big and interesting and flashy, right? You know, Africa is the next frontier for growth in the world. And then you can back it up with some specifics like 4 out of 10 new jobs created across the entire world came out of Africa. You've combined this bold narrative, this bold, interesting point with a specific idea, a specific fact, right? That suddenly creates confidence. And you do the same thing with your business, right? You want to tell us, you know, the big overarching opportunity gain story. And then you want to give us a specific fact that allows us to trust and have confidence that, okay, yeah, he's that guy. She's that lady. She's going to get it done.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting point. Okay. So I'm going to take a question in the chat. I think we just have one. And then we'll move on to the lightning round, essentially to round up this this interview, because we're just right up to the 1 hour mark. The question we have here is from Will, Smart Havens Africa. They have raised grants, they've raised debt, and I think equity too. So he's asking, I'm not surprised he's interested in the debt thing, because I think that's the next milestone for his company. And the question is, how much debt should I consider taking on, considering the revenues are still small? So should this be in relationship with what the business can generate? I guess this is a basic question, but I'll hand it over to you, Christine.
For sure. I think the idea here, quite frankly, is you take on the debt you need to get to the next stage, right? And particularly with debt, right? You think about it a bit like, you know, building credibility. So even if you identify that, look, over 8 months, I need, you know, 200 of whatever currency, if you can figure out an intentional way to manage your cash flow and stagger it so that you're collecting, you know, 30 at a time or 40 at a time and repaying, what that allows you to do is develop some credibility. Because maybe after you've done that initial 100, right, you can go back and say, look, I've done this, I've repaid on time. You gave me a 90-day, repayment period consistently over the last 4 or 5 times. I've repaid in 30 days or less. Can you consider dropping my interest rate from X to Y? Suddenly, you don't have this massive 200X, debt on your sheet, right? You've got 100 X that you've taken, and you've taken at a lower rate than you had to take the 200, right? So just as an example. So the idea being that think about your model, right? Look intentionally at your business model, what your financial projections are, what your cash flow needs are, and then seek out the debt that's going to allow you to both, you know, solve the problem that you need the capital to solve, but also, you know, generate credibility with your lenders.
Fair enough. So you heard that, Will. The goal is to essentially, you're still telling a story that I'm credible, that I've proven myself with smaller amounts, and I deserve to, more or less to be given access to bigger amounts. The other question here is coming from Donald. He's our member from Uganda, and he's saying, what strategy would you recommend for startup in a capital-intensive venture for improving cash flows so that you don't rock the boat by taking on debt?
For sure. I think there's one thing here around, you know, cash flow management. And the key thing is paying attention, right? Making sure that somebody is minding the numbers. One of the most fascinating things I learned when I started working with businesses was how easy it was for people to operate themselves out of existence because they weren't minding the numbers, right? You know, 2 comes in, you know, 1 goes out, 3 comes in, 2 goes out. it looks to you like maybe it's making sense, but you're not minding the numbers. And so you get to the end of the road and you're like, oh, crap, actually, a net negative has gone out, right? And I'm in debt. And I have all these things that I need to pay attention to. So, you know, especially when you're in a capital intensive venture, there's a lot of pressure, right? And that pressure, I think, can sometimes encourage a lack of attention because you just want to execute. You just want to get it done. You want to get these things out of the way because, you know, you need that capital to come in. You need this thing to do this. So sometimes you take a deal you shouldn't have taken because, you know, you think it's going to bring some capital in. But is the timing of that deal going to be right for you, right? Is the cash flow going to come in at the right time? Should I really be given a 30-day, you know, credit period? Should it maybe be, you know, 10 days or 15 days? Should I really be working with this vendor or this other vendor instead? So I think attention to detail, mind the numbers. That would really be my sort of like the core of the strategy around your, you know, capital intensive startup. Make sure that you're building out the right thing. And you know, the interesting thing about sometimes when you have a business that's capital intensive, coming back to this piece around story, is that you also want to make sure, right, that even if your business is not yet profitable, it's demonstrating an ability to capture the market. It's demonstrating an ability to create value in the market, because that also creates confidence, right?
Okay, so essentially, the whole thing about delaying gratification, foregoing short term gain for the big game, for the big picture. Okay, we are right just over 1 hour, so I'm going to close the interview and move into the lightning round, which is supposed to be some segment for us to get to know who you are better, and I have two sets of questions here, and you have to answer them as quickly as possible. So the first is, if you had to choose between smart people and smart money for a business, which would you choose and why? And for emphasis, smart money is money that is efficiently and strategically allocated. So if you had to choose between smart people and smart money, and you can't have both, which would you go for and why?
I guess I'm actually struggling. Like, how do you have smart money without smart people?
Okay. So let me give you a scenario. You have a bright idea, right, and then you don't have anybody on your team, but then you have money. Maybe you have some finance background, you have the relationships to deploy the money, but then you don't yet have a team. So if you could buy your way to success through money, or if you could work with other smart people to find your way there, which route do you think is more efficient?
Oh, okay. No, then I think you want to go with the people, right? You definitely want to go with the people, because smart people, right, the right kind of smarts, right, not like book smarts, but actually smart people can always find money. They can always make money, for sure. Yeah.
So you'll always put your money on the smart people?
I'll always put my money on, they're having the right people.
Okay.
Yeah. Almost always.
Okay, good. The second question is, I'm going to give you one word. And here there are about six words. And you give me the first word or phrase that comes to your mind.
Okay.
So I throw you the word. You let me know what you think by virtue of one word or one phrase. Okay. So the first word is entrepreneurship.
Growth.
Oh, I didn't catch that. I think that was a blip.
Oh, yeah. No. So I was saying for me, entrepreneurship, it would be growth, like growth and value.
Oh, growth and value. Okay. Interesting. The second word is Africa.
Opportunity.
Great. The third word is money.
Stealth.
Wow. Okay. The fourth is failure.
Again, opportunity.
Opportunity, failure. Very uncommon bedfellows, but I'll take it. Failure, opportunity. Okay. The next word is success.
Pitfall.
So how come failure gets to get the cream and then success is, I guess you would have to explain that to us, but then the sixth word is leadership.
People.
Interesting. I wouldn't have expected anything else. So can you just briefly just let us know why To you, failure is an opportunity, but then success is a pitfall.
Okay. When you're building a big business, right? A huge scaled business, right? The faster you fail at certain things, the better for you, truth be told, right? If you can figure out how to fail fast and figure out how to fail without destroying your business, you're going to save yourself a lot of heartache. Sometimes I've seen ventures that have had, you know, taken a lot of quick wins in the beginning, get stuck. And they get stuck because they haven't learned to do other things. They haven't learned to maneuver in a sticky situation. They haven't learned to outthink or outwit or out-execute their competitor, right? Because they just had some, you know, really, really good luck. The opportunity, the market was booming, you know. And I think that I see this a lot with opportunistic businesses, right? You know, a bunch of folks that just saw an opportunity, jumped on it, bam, 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 bam. And then the rubber meets the road and then they're stuck. And that's it. It's business is done. And so I think sometimes the lessons and the resilience that you pick up from, you know, certain kinds of failures can be very, very important for your ability to build something that is, you know, is going to withstand the test of time. This is also why in the, you know, venture capital space, investors like founders who are not doing it for the first time. It's not for any reason other than when somebody knows how exactly something is going to work or not work, it's very useful.
Interesting, very interesting. I think we have a hell of a soundbite there, I can imagine, you know. And one thing I buy into, which I think is a lesson for all of us who are listening to this, is that if you are going through hard times right now with your business, you're going through difficult times, and your beginning feels like it's rougher than it should be, what you're hearing from Kristen H. Wilson is that you are in luck, because what you're going through training school, that's exactly what it sounds like. You're building the muscle that would assure your success if you stick to it. So I can't think of this said in any better way. So thank you very much, Christine, for you did very, very well in the lightning round. And I'm very happy and impressed with the depth of insights that you have shared with us here. And so to conclude, what's the best way? I know you've told us before, but I'm sure the topic of capital might lead some people who didn't listen to your first episode to listen to this episode. And I'm sure they're impressed by everything they've listened to. So I expect they'll go back and listen to the first episode. What's the best way to follow you and your work at Spurt? And what exactly do you do at Spurt?
For sure. So my role at Spurt is more sort of like strategy driven. So I help, you know, solve sort of large scale problems. We've got an ops team and we've got a growth team, and they kind of do the day to day pieces. I think about the strategic questions at Spurt. I typically sit in on client engagements for the problem solving pieces and, you know, figuring out the big arc of problems. I also lead a lot of our sort of like product drive. So I help us to develop new services and technology products that are going to improve our service delivery and our value proposition to our clients. In terms of reaching out to us, you know, you can always sort of shoot an email to any of us. So if you know somebody who works at Spurts, their email is always going to be their first name and then, you know, at spurt.group. So I'm Kristen. So my email is kristen@spurt.group. We're on social media as well. You can find us on LinkedIn if you search Spurt. You always put the exclamation mark after Spurt because we're very excited about, you know, generating those growth spurts. And that's an easy way to find us. So at Spurt Solutions or Spurt exclamation mark will typically help you to find us on Twitter, on Instagram, on LinkedIn, and so on and so forth. But feel free to shoot an email, shoot a message. We generally thrive on being quite accessible and, you know, making ourselves available to be able to help out.
Thank you very much for being our special guest on this session. And I'm sure anybody who listens to this is really going to be inspired and educated by the insights, the knowledge, and very practical stuff you shared with us here today. Thank you very much for being a guest. And we look forward to having you again on the podcast and a mastermind strategy session. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Small Starter Business Podcast. To take our free business courses or join one of our signature programs for special entrepreneurs like you, head over to smallstarter.com to join our private community. See you inside.